the question was asked in context with the Shotaran we just learned, being that we see in many instances that the commentaries have different interpretations of prophecies and different interpretations of verses in Tanakh. So where do we draw the line? Why is it that we say our interpretations hold water and have validity and the Christian interpretations are not accepted? And I would like to address the question on two levels. The first being understanding our approach to the Christian interpretations, and then understanding our own machlokot. I would have rather to work in the reverse order, understanding ourselves before understanding them. But given that the question was asked in this form, I think it's more logical to work in this order. Even though that's not the educational direction I would ordinarily take, to first counter someone else before explaining our own position, if that's the question, I think that is the way to approach it. And the first answer really is tempered by the second answer. But I will try to present each one in full force, and then you'll see how they work together. If you look at Rashi, and this is a little difficult because Rashi was censored. Rashi in Psalms, Rashi in Tehillim, Rashi in Yeshaya, in the book of Isaiah, Rashi in Bereishis. Rashi deals with Christian claims. And Rashi does not come along and say, well, our tradition is, and so the Christians that don't know what they're talking about. He doesn't say that. What does Rashi do? Rashi takes the source, and he takes the context, and then he proves from the source itself why we do not accept the Christian interpretation. You take the Ramban, Nachmanides. Same thing. Nachmanides doesn't come along and say, we're right because this is our tradition. We're right because we know how to learn the Psukim. We're right because this is the way the Prophet meant. Look, I have a tradition from my father, from his father, all the way back to the Prophet. No. Ramban he has a whole letter, a whole piece that he wrote on Hein Yaskil Avdi. We'll get to that in the end of Isaiah, a chapter about the Messiah. And he wrote a whole work discussing how the Christians interpret it and why we don't accept that. And his claims are from within the text. And the truth is that it doesn't begin with Rashi and the Ramban, but if you go back to the Talmud and you go back to the Medrash, so the Talmud and the Medrash quote conversations between the rabbis and the early Christians, where the Christians would say, why does it say, Na'ase Adam, let us make man? Isn't there more than one if God is saying us? And right away, the rabbis showed them from the context that God is referred to in singular form, even in the context over there. So what is the Na'ase? So the simple reading Na'ase could mean God says, me and the earth, I will use the earth as my partner to make man. Our tradition says God called the angels in and said, let's make man together. And that was to teach us a certain concept. But however you interpret it, when the rabbis dealt with the Christian claims, they didn't come and say, look at our tradition, it's right. They first said, let's work with the text. And from the text itself, we will see why your claims don't have validity. And I have a book at home called You Take Jesus, I'll Take God. And in that book, he takes many of the Christian claims and does just that. He shows you how, if you only know the context, you see the answer to the question. And I think that's an important point to know in its own right. Meaning that when you ask me about the Christian claims about the verses, so there, I'm less bothered, because if you only look at the context, so you see that that doesn't work. I don't like the claims that say, it doesn't make sense. How could you say God could have a son? Okay. I don't feel like that's the strongest claim against them. I don't feel like that's really...
opportunity, like a challenge.
I don't feel like that.
You can say may not make sense. That's what makes that
argument. I don't like that. I feel like you want to discuss logical arguments. So logical arguments begin with the rabbis in Yashka's day. They didn't accept them. So if you're telling me the Jews, why didn't the leadership? The leadership was always the one who led. So shouldn't they have understood that? Why couldn't he convince them? Why did he have to develop his own religion? Why did he only work with the people who were not learned? What happened to all the rabbis? If he's so right and his interpretations are so right, they were always searching for truth. Why didn't they? And that's the first claim of Nachmanides in his debate with the Christian. He says, you're quoting to me from my own texts. You're quoting to me from my own tradition to argue me. Well, wait a second. The rabbis who you're quoting me, the early Christians would quote rabbis to say you should be a Christian. So in Nachmanides' days, that's not such early Christians. You're talking about a few centuries ago. And they were still making claims off of the Mishnah and the Talmud saying, you see, you should be a Christian. So Nachmanides says it's a ridiculous claim. There's nothing to debate. If you're going to use my texts, well, my rabbis, they did not accept it. So you can't use what they said as a claim that I should become a Christian. So that's part of the reason that I feel like the first thing we have to deal with is to understand that using the text itself, knowing the context itself, you can see that those interpretations don't work. You have a specific question, just go looking, you'll see it on your own. That's as far as that goes. Now you come and say, wait a second, but we have interpretations that are also difficult. Okay. We have to understand that our interpretations work with a system. There are 32 laws of derivation. And that system we have on tradition, that it's all the way back to Sinai. Be it the 13 laws of derivation, the 32 laws of derivation. And that's a logical system. Now, the exact application of that system, so that's something which was based on tradition, and we lost that. It's true that because we were not on the level to apply those laws of derivation, we start having disagreements as to how to apply them. But the disagreements are within a certain realm. And within that realm, so we say, okay, it can be A or B or C. And sometimes you have verses where we don't apply even those laws of derivation. We don't have a clear-cut definition of this pasuk. What does it mean, lo yasur shevet miyuda? So Chazal didn't go into that in great depth. It only became an issue in later generations when the Christians started quoting that pasuk, and then the commentaries contended with it. But when the commentaries contended with it, they weren't using the same level of derivation as the Talmud. When the Talmud uses laws of derivation, so then it's halacha. If someone walks up to a rabbi of the Talmud and says, Ilan Ramon, I want to go out to the moon, when do I make Kiddush? So the rabbi says, well, if you use the laws of derivation on this pasuk this way, so then this is how you know when to make Kiddush on the moon. So we lost that power of derivation. When Nachmanides gives an interpretation in the verse, what Nachmanides is telling you is a pshat. He's telling you, here's a way to understand the pasuk. But it's not on the same level as the Talmud giving a definition in the pasuk. The Talmud's definition carries halachic weight. Nachmanides' definition gives us a nice way to understand the pasuk, which is within the realm of tradition. But it's not as powerful as the Talmud. So even there we have levels. And that's why when it comes to a question of understanding pshat, so you can have different explanations, different interpretations. Lot's wife looked behind and turned into salt. What turned into salt? The city turned into salt. You were going to say Lot's wife turned into salt. Yeah, Rashi says that. But is that pshat in the pasuk? I don't know. Machlokas. Because it doesn't have any halachic relevance. It's different commentaries answered differently. We have a tradition that there are four levels of interpretation, and each one is divided into more levels of interpretation. Pshat, Remez, Drush, Sod. So Chazal worked with Remez and Drush, and worked less with Pshat. Along came Rashi, the Ibn Ezra, the Ramban, many of the Rishonim, and said, wait, but what's Pshat in the Pasuk? And here, Chazal weren't as focused on that. The Chazal said, pshat, you'll read, you'll figure out pshat. Ah, but then you reach a generation where you read and you don't know what you're talking about. So Rashi, Ramban, and all the commentaries come in and say to you, okay, pshat could be this and pshat could be that. And that's, again, within the realm of our tradition, but it doesn't carry as much weight because it's more an understanding of pshat in the pasuk. So again, to summarize, we said, when it comes to others' claims, there we don't even use our tradition to counter it as much. We just say, look at the context, and if you know enough, you'll see that the claims don't hold validity. Now you ask our tradition. So our tradition worked with a system. Within that system, our tradition was weakened over time, and you have differences between the rabbis. You'll notice that the differences are within a certain realm, and still, there are differences, and we have to work with that. The rabbis of the Talmud could use their tradition to answer questions from the verses themselves. Later on, post-Talmud, we are no longer at that level, and our interpretations are more about understanding pshat than they are about deriving from the verse halacha. And that's where you find Rashi, Ramban, and the other commentaries.